Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 136 of Allied Strategies. My name is Tristan. Joining me are the somewhat victorious duo, Neil and Ben. How are you guys doing?
Well, you just don't introduce us one at a time. It's so confusing.
Well, you guys were a team recently, so I decided to have you be a team in the introduction.
All right, well, we failed. Here we are.
All right, well, more on that later. This week what we're going to do, we've been talking about Dominaria a lot for like all the last maybe 8 or 9 episodes, some large number. This week we're going to take a little bit of a detour, and we're going to build a Brawl deck based on the new Brawl format.
Sorry, yes. You said a Brawl deck or a Brawl deck?
A Brawl deck, not a Brawl deck. That's an important factor. And we'll talk about Brawl, the issue in Brawl, later in the episode as well. But before we do that, we got to thank our good friends of the podcast over on Patreon. Adam, Matt, Sean, Brett, Britton, Kyle, Caroline, and we're welcoming Eric as well to the good friend tier, who's been a loyal patron at the friend of the podcast tier for many months, and has now joined us in the good friend tier, and we're very thankful and proud to have the support of all 8 of you. So, thank you for
your
support.
It's funny because the more popular we get, you know, at some point, we're going to have to, our podcast is just going to be naming all of the good friends of the podcast.
This is like the problem Richard Garfield had at the start of Magic, where it's like, if everybody has a Black Lotus and that's a problem because they bought 4 boxes each, then that's a great problem to have, right?
We'll figure that out when that happens.
So it's like, oh no, we're getting $10,000, you know, a month. Got to figure out a way to cut down this 5-minute intro.
I think what we should do is we should just keep having you say everyone's names, but like slowly speed up your voice. And so as we get more and more subscribers, it'll get higher and higher pitched, and it'll just get funnier
and funnier.
Eventually,
it'll just sound like Mara. So,
we'll cap it at a 1-minute
segment.
Excitement,
you know?
Yeah. All right.
No, it's just so exciting.
I like the ideas. Keep them coming. We got to keep brainstorming because, you know, this is quickly becoming an issue for us. This week in Magic, though, you guys just played in Grand Prix Columbus with Eric as well, who's been on the podcast before. How'd you guys do?
We got 8th place. Very strong finish, yeah.
Top 8.
Getting some much-needed pro points.
It's pretty unlucky to top 8 a tournament and not even get, you know, an invite and the elimination rounds and everything.
I don't really think that that's true.
But regardless, I'm very, very happy for you guys. How'd the tournament go overall? Is that, you know, was there a round you punted that could have gotten you into the top 8 or top 4? Or was it all just great?
No.
I think, let's see, we lost 3 rounds. Our third loss, I think I was playing the deciding game, and I think I played quite well. But there just wasn't anything I could do at the end of the day. One of our losses, I think a majority of us didn't get to play Magic, really, which was too bad. And then, what was our first loss, Neil? Do you remember it?
Not particularly well. It was really early in the tournament. It was like round 3 or 4.
I think we did misbuild our pools by like 1 or 2 cards.
Yeah, that was true.
Which, you know, it's hard to trace exactly what that costs you, but it could have easily cost us a match. But I was like pretty pleased with our play over the course of the weekend. I think Dominaria is like a pretty tricky set to be playing correctly. You have a lot of decisions, and it's pretty easy to screw them up. And I think the 3 of us were actually just playing really well.
It's also hard because just no one knows what all the cards do.
Oh, yeah. Reading the cards is half of the skill level.
Yeah, there's so many cards that are, you know, have counterintuitive wording that do something different than how they've been templated the last 10 years.
I think every single round, one of the 6 people playing learned what a card did.
Or, like, forgot and re-remembered. I know at one point in the tournament, I'm just like, oh, well, you just have lethal, Ben. And then I just forgot that he didn't have lethal. That was nice.
Yeah.
Like, these types of things. Like, because I was thinking of Garna, and of course Garna doesn't give itself haste, which I knew, but then, like, for some reason, I was in the moment I thought it did. And that's why it's good in team tournaments to be like, okay, why do you think you gotta like? You always gotta double check because your teammate might be a big dummy.
Yeah, I heard somebody almost stop somebody from playing the Eldest Reborn when their opponent had no creatures.
No, that didn't happen. Also, way to ruin a little bit of my card of the week story, Tristan.
Oh yeah, taste it.
Anything Tristan could do to bring down card of the week.
We'll just delay the full contents of that story until my card of the week.
All right, Let's move there now. Although, brief final note here, this week in Magic. Allied Strategies Twitter, it's thriving. It's the hip new place to be. It's where all the cool kids are. We're at Allied Strats. So give us a follow there if you haven't, or whatever. All right, Ben, tell us about your card of the week.
Well, my card of the week, obviously, is the Eldest Reborn. The Eldest Reborn is a saga. It costs 4 and a black. Chapter 1 is each opponent sacrifices a creature or planeswalker. Chapter 2 is each opponent discards a card. And Chapter 3 is put target creature or planeswalker card from a graveyard onto the battlefield under your control. Now, listeners of the podcast will recall that I said that this card was the best black uncommon, and I said it was really, really great, and Neil was like, no, you're stupid, this card is bad. That's and not true I at think all. I think history has clearly proven me to be correct, because the Eldest Reborn, every time I've played with it, it's just been fantastic. That's not true. Sometimes I play with it and it's only good. And then other times I play with it and it's just fantastic. And it actually, you know, not everyone knows the full text of the card, because when I was playing in the tournament against Seth Manfield, you know, a very good professional Magic player who probably knows what all the cards do, you know, there were no creatures in play, and I confidently cast the Eldest Reborn, and Seth was just like, okay. And Neil, who was watching our game, was also like, okay, what the heck is going on? And I was like, Seth, please sacrifice your Karn. Because neither Neil nor Seth had remembered that the Eldest Reborn actually also forces people to sacrifice planeswalkers.
Oh, it was nice.
It was pretty nice. Immediately afterwards, Seth said, well, that sucked.
Which is something else you said in a different part of the match, which is pretty funny.
Yeah.
It just blows you out and you go, well, that sucks.
Yeah. I had the option of, you know, in Chapter 3, I could bring the Karn back under my control. I actually ended up choosing not to, because I was afraid of, like, an Into the Royal, or I guess in this set it's called Blink of an Eye. And I instead reanimated our good friend of the podcast, Yargle.
Yargle's certainly an honorary good friend of the podcast.
That's part
anyway.
Of it. Oh, stole your thunder, Ben. Sorry.
Yeah. Anyway, the Eldest Reborn is great, and all the haters can continue to hate, and I will take this card very high.
All right. My card of the week is Tempest Djinn. Tempest Djinn is blue for a 0/4 flyer. But that's not all. It also gets +1/+0 for each basic island you control. So I first picked this in a draft I did while you guys were busy winning the GP. Coming close to winning the GP. And I kind of went all in on this basically mono blue deck. I had like 12 islands, 4 swamps ended up being what I played. And Tempest Djinn was quite good. But I'm a little bit worried that my perception of the card might be biased, because the draft blue ended up being very open. Pack 2, pick 7, I selected In Bolas's Clutches.
Oh yeah, that's realistic.
Suggested to me that maybe this is above average case for drafts where you first pick Tempest Djinn. but nonetheless, I was pretty happy with how things went. I did get to cast In Bolas's Clutches. Here's how the sequence that I most enjoyed went. My opponent on turn 6, they drew up to 2 cards. Then they cast the Flame of Keld and discarded another copy of the Flame of Keld as Chapter 1. And then I cast In Bolas's Clutches on the Flame of Keld.
Oh!
So then the next turn I got to draw the 2 cards and they did not. So that was my favorite.
Sounds like that went well.
Yeah, I won that draft pretty easily. It was good times all around.
I like how this has a lot to do with Tempest Djinn.
Well, and Tempest Djinn was the key play. If I hadn't first picked Tempest Djinn and then not passed any blue cards, I might not have been paid off with a pack 2, pick 7 in Bolas's Clutches. And a pack 3, pick 2 in Bolas's Clutches.
I feel like this card of the week was just a humble brag for Tristan.
There's
getting
just no humbleness clutches involved. I've never been accused of being humble. This draft, I also I cast In Bolas's Clutches on multiple different basic lands. Pretty good.
Oh boy!
Goodness gracious!
There was a game where I cast 4 of it because I had the blue black gold card that lets you exile a historic card from your graveyard and then cast it while it's exiled under her.
Okay.
So that was pretty cool. And I also, I developed an infinite combo with that card as well, with Time of Ice. So the way
Oh, wow, that's gas.
With the third trick saga chapter on the stack, yeah, you can tap her to exile the top card of your library, and then she bounces back from that third chapter, and you can rebuy the Time of Ice again.
That's very good.
Yeah. So that's just one of the many synergies.
Time of Ice is pretty messed up.
Yeah, Time of Ice is really broken. The number of people that did not, that, you know, try to untap the first creature two turns later is pretty high, because it's kind of weird that it taps it for so long, but it does, and the card's great.
But I have, several Tempest Djinn related stories, I guess one and a half, that have been slightly edited to make them slightly untrue but more funny.
Oh, I do that with all of my stories on this podcast.
Yeah, he just doesn't doesn't say the caveat. Yeah.
So I was watching Josh McLean play in a team sealed match, and his opponent was playing mono blue, and I saw one exiled Tempest Djinn. And at some point, Josh McLean was deciding whether or not to attack with a flying creature, because his opponents had nine islands in play, so Tempest Djinn was a 9/4, and Josh asks his teammate, are there any, like, team or battle rages in this format? And his teammate, like, thinks about it, and is just like, no, I don't think so. So Josh attacks with a flying creature. His opponent untaps, plays a 10th island, and then plays Helm of the Host, and equips it to the Tempest Djinn, and then attacks for 20 even against a 20-life opponent. And then they're like, well, I guess there is a team or battle rage.
There's another team or battle rage in the format as well. Warlord's Fury giving your whole team first strike, plus Quende, Pride of Femref, which gives your first strikers double strike.
Pretty difficult to do that off of nine islands.
Oh, there's a way. It's possible. I mean, you just need to Inbolus as clutches a lot of mountains and plains. All right, what's your other half of the story?
My other half of the story is just, you're saying you got kind of greedy by playing Tempest Djinn. I put Goblin Chain Whirler in my two-color red-black deck, and I cast it on turn three twice and killed a creature both times.
Yeah, Chain Whirler, I'm less convinced. Like, I would play Tempest Djinn, I think, in most 10-island decks. I guess I would maybe play Chain Whirler in 10-mountain
decks. Have you
read
the text
decks
on Goblin Chain Whirler?
Yeah, all right, it's really good.
Because Neil didn't. Neil thought that it would just kill all of my clerics when I played it.
That doesn't make sense. Goblins aren't known for haphazardly flinging chains and hurting their own friends.
No, they're not.
Definitely not.
All right, Neil, what is your card of the week?
All right, my card of the week is Josu Vess, Lich Knight, which is 2BB for 4/5 with Menace. Legendary Zombie Knight, that's rare. And but wait, there's more. Kicker, 5 and a black, so you can pay 10 mana. And when Josu Vess, Lich Knight enters the battlefield, if it was kicked, create 8 2/2 black Zombie Knight creature tokens with Menace. So if you're doing the math, that's 20 power, all with Menace. And so the funny thing about Josu Vess, and I think we mentioned it last week, is just for the first, like, 10 or 11 times that we had heard about this card being kicked, the controller who kicked Josu Vess just lost the game every single time. And at the GP, so we're already keeping track of this, like we heard another like three or four stories on day one of just Josu Vess getting kicked and the person who cast it losing. And we're just like, this is just getting ridiculous. Got up to like 10 or 11 people. And then finally we heard a couple instances where Josu Vess kicked actually won. And then day two, we happened to open this card. And we built a green-black deck with double Song of Fraile. So it was, like, pretty reasonable and I ended up playing this deck, pretty reasonable to actually get to the point where you could kick it. And thankfully, the very first game I kicked it, I won. But I think the moral of the story actually is that a 4/5 mana for 4 is messed up. And so pretty much every time I just played it on turn 4, I would easily win and much more easily than, like, trying to, like, wait by playing some other card and trying to kick it way later. So I think if you cast this card on turn 4, oftentimes you just should, because a 4/5 menace for 4 is just already unbeatable. And I won many, many a game by doing that.
Yeah, I think one of Neil's opponents on day one Like, Neil narrowly beat, kicked Josu Vess when all of the tokens had haste as well, because his opponent had a Garna in play. And after Neil beat it, and we, like, were joking about the statistic, his opponent was just like, you know, now that you mention it, I've kicked Josu Vess 3 times, every time the tokens had haste, and I've never won.
Yeah, it's just unreal. It's still like we're at 30% or something of like the card winning, maybe lower. It's just wonderful.
Yeah, that is absurd. That card, it's cursed. The card is cursed.
By the way, Song of Freyalis is completely messed up.
Oh yeah, yeah. So you were right. You were right on that one, Tristan. So pat yourself on the back.
I think that was one of my big success stories of the set, was getting the call on Song of Freyalis. Right.
The key is really those sapling migration, like. You really need both.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a mullet, right? You know, business on the front, party in the back. That's what Song of Freyalis is. Those first two are the business modes, and then the back one, the chapter three, that's the party mode.
That's the one where I attacked there was this game where I thought I could just never, ever, ever win. My opponent, it was a green-black mirror, and they had, like, more slime clips than I had, more, like, busted rares and mythics than I had. I was like, oh, I can just never win. And then I just drew Song of Freyalis, spent all 13 mana that I had afterwards. And then a couple turns later, I proudly declared that I attack you for 52 trample damage. And then Ben just turns to me and he's like, I like the sound of that. Yeah, it was a delight.
All right. That's been our card of the week segment here. Pretty good card of the week. If all card of weeks were like that, I would be in favor of the segment. Let's move on to our main topic now. So this week we are going to build a Brawl deck. Brawl, of course, for those of you that don't know, which... maybe some of you, is a singleton format, so it's like Commander, but the decks are 60 cards rather than 100, and every card needs to be legal and standard to be in your deck. It also follows the color identity rules, so you pick your Commander, and then every card in your deck has to not contain mana symbols that are not on your Commander. And yeah, that's what we're going to do. So we picked out a Commander to brawl with, which is Liliana Death's Majesty. Because you can select Planeswalkers in Brawl. But first, let's talk a little bit about how Brawl has been going kind of as a format in the last month and a bit while it's been around. On the Magic Online 1v1 Brawl challenges, I think they've run two now, and both times, Baral and Galta were the only decks to make top 8, Baral being very dominant in the format. Ben, you've played the most Brawl of any of us. What do you think of that news?
Well, I played Brawl before I think Brawl got popular. So I've never really played against that deck very much, but I've seen some deck lists, and God, it just looks miserable to play against. There's so many counter spells in Standard, and you know, you can just play all of them, and you always have Brawl in turn two. And Brawl is a very powerful Magic card. Like reducing the cost of all your spells and also getting like a pretty significant upside anytime you counter something in your deck with 30 counter spells or whatever is pretty nice. And in the Brawl format, there's just not, most decks don't have that much removal because there's just not that much good removal when you can only play one. Like you can't play 4 Vraska's Contempts, you know, so like what are you going to play after you play the first Vraska's Contempt? You can play one Cast Down, I guess. That doesn't kill Brawl.
Yeah, that seems like a particularly poor Brawl card.
So decks generally don't have that much removal, and so the fact that you just have this really powerful turn 2 commander that you can play every single game is really nice, or overpowered perhaps. And just playing against a deck with 30 counterspells just isn't fun. You know, it's just not fun Magic. Especially because, like, you know, the way you'd like to play Brawl is... when you start with 30 life, you'd like to play some cards that don't see play in Standard, but that look fun to play with. Like, that's what I liked about singleton formats. That's what I like about Commander. Like, when Commander was young, I really enjoyed just playing with a bunch of wacky, expensive cards that I never could play with in any real constructed format otherwise. And you can't do that if your opponent just has, like, 8 cancels in their deck, you know? So... I think Brawl should just get banned. It's just really unfun to play against and stupid. And it's what you should play if you want to win. But I don't really understand why you just want to be super cutthroat about a format like this. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I guess some people will try to win no matter what, and you know that's fine. Like, I don't blame them for that. I just want the I would prefer it if Wizards built the incentives for this format to be such that you can't, you don't play unfun things. So I would like them to ban Brawl.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Because Magic Online versus, you know, the kind of intended way to play this format is pretty different. Magic Online is, you know, one versus one only in these challenges where there's, you know, significant prize pools. And so that really incentivizes you to play these kind of more cutthroat decks that quickly get solved down to one or two very good commanders. The same thing sort of happens in one versus one commander where, like, Jace, for instance, Prodigy has a similar play rate as Baral, not quite as dominant, but very high. So that's certainly a problem, but it's not that doesn't translate necessarily into the paper environment where they've stated they want this game to be, you know, a multiplayer thing. Brawl and any kind of counterspell-based deck's power falls way off as you add more players, right? Because your counterspells are just one-for-one-ing people, and that's not a great strategy in a three-player game or more.
Yeah, any one-for-one strategy is way worse in multiplayer.
Right. So,
like, playing efficient removal spells is just horrible.
It's tough, though, because, like, you know, you're trying to highlight this new Brawl format. The only place where you can do that and have deck lists out is really on Magic Online right now, and it's you know, this one versus one format, so it's a little weird, and it's kind of not representative of what people's experience might be if they play, you know, Brawl at their local store or at a GP. There's a lot of brawling at GPs happening now, so that's kind of what we're gonna do today. Is we're gonna build this Brawl deck. We're gonna build it around Liliana, Death's Majesty, and it's not gonna be good against Brawl one versus one. It's not gonna be designed to be good against it, and you're basically, you know, don't try to win that matchup with this deck. This deck is going to be, you know, maybe it's going to be good against other equally powerful one versus one decks that are trying to, you know, also do proactive things, and you just want to see who can do the more cool proactive thing. And it should be more of a fun, you know, multiplayer experience as well, that you could maybe bring to a GP or to your local game store, or maybe it inspires you to do something similar to that. So that's kind of at least my starting point with what we're going to do here today. And if you, the listeners, particularly the patrons, enjoy this episode, we've got our Patreon deck episode for Dominaria coming up sometime in the next couple months, and we might include some Brawl options there alongside standard options, depending on how much you guys enjoy this episode versus when we've done standard decks and stuff in the past. So bear that in mind. Send us your feedback. Maybe tweet us at Allied Strats, where all the cool kids are. So let's get started with Liliana, Death's Majesty, and maybe a good thing to do is just to kind of read the card, since it's going to be our commander. You know, I know that reading the card is not always something we do on this podcast, but let's do that this time. So Liliana, Death's Majesty, 3 black, Planeswalker, Liliana, 5 starting loyalty. It plus 1s to create a 2/2 black zombie creature token, and then you mill yourself for 2. It minus 3s to return a creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield and turn it into a black zombie, in addition to its other colors and types. And it minus 7s to destroy all non-zombie creatures. So Neil, when you see this Planeswalker, what are the first kind of cards you want to build around if you always have access to it in mono black?
So the really cool thing about this card is that even though it's mono black, it has a lot of dimensions going on with it. Like, the first thing is that it makes a bunch of zombies. So any ways that you can make zombies good, that's going to make this card better. And we know that this card was on Amonkhet. There's a lot of lords and ways to make zombies better, so that's something to look at. Then it also self-mills yourself, which means anything that cares about being in the graveyard or being reanimated is really, really nice. And then, of course, the second mode just reanimates. So, you know, the first one with the second mode is great. And then the last mode, destroying all non-zombie creatures, helps kind of prevent or fight against the go-wide decks. And then also, obviously, just pairs well with any other zombies. So,
The ultimate's probably pretty unrealistic against, you know, a wide token-based strategy, since it costs 5, and then it has to be defended for 2 turns before it does the minus 7. But yeah, it's definitely a threatening ultimate, which means that Liliana's going to have to be answered every time you play her, right? If you plus.
Yeah, the other thing I want to mention, though, is that also she does make zombies, but she happens to make 2 of them, and There's a lot of ways to take advantage of putting a lot of permanents in play. So things that come to mind are like Ascend.
She makes 1 zombie when you plus, right?
Yeah, she makes 1 2/2 zombie when you plus.
Oh yeah, you're right. Sorry, it's 2 cards I can get. She puts a lot of permanents in play, is my point.
Sure.
Yeah, she does do that. Both of her abilities will put permanents in play.
All right, Ben, how about you? When you see this, is there anything else that any other synergies you're looking at?
I want to reanimate things, man.
So you want to build like a focused all-in reanimator type strategy?
I mean, I don't know what you mean by all-in reanimate. Like, you know, there's nothing in standard that's as good as Gristlebrand, right?
Okay.
You can't just expect whatever you reanimate to actually win the game. But you can put like cool cards like Razaketh in your deck, you know, with the plan. Like, you can put synergies in your deck where you have like Dark Bargain or whatever, right? Where you can Dark Bargain into some like pretty big creature like Razaketh, and then you can play Liliana and Minus on it. That's just something that's really powerful. And I think actually there's a lot of reanimation cards with the release of Dominaria. So I think this is something that you could try to do like pretty consistently. Even if you get Sorceress Spyglass or whatever, if your opponent kills your Liliana or stops you from using it somehow, like, you can put enough redundancy in your deck so that reanimation is like a pretty reliable plan.
I'm in for that. How about you, Neil? Are you in for building that kind of deck?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a few different directions to go here, but there's only so many cards in standard, so I think we probably can just take advantage of all these different angles and come up with something really sweet. All
right.
Like, for example, I'm just throwing it out here. You want a card that's both a zombie and a card that works with reanimation? Miasmic Mummy.
What does that do?
Just saying. Oh, it's a 2/2 for two. It's a 2/2 for two when it enters the battlefield. Each player discards a card.
I see. That's a synergy.
I mean, it depends on if you're going to play a card like Lord of the Accursed or whatever in your deck.
Also,
I'm not really sure that we want to do.
Liliana puts a bunch of cards in your graveyard. A lot of them happen to be creatures. What's good at also reanimating other creatures? Godfarrow's Gift.
Yeah, no, I'm in for Godfarrow's Gift.
Gates of the Afterlife can help go find it because we're putting a lot of cards into our graveyard. I mean, there's some stuff here, maybe.
All right, so, let's do it. Let's start throwing some cards in the old deck here.
I think Godfarrow's Gift is just very good. So
yeah, okay. I'm in for Godfarrow's Gift. What about Gate to the Afterlife, Ben? Are you in for that?
I could be in for it. I think it depends on how many creatures we end up putting in our deck. It doesn't trigger off of tokens, which is important to note.
Right.
So, it's a little worse with Liliana than you might hope. But it certainly is a possibility.
What about, in terms of big targets to reanimate, I like Razaketh. I think that's...
Yeah, so Razaketh is probably just the best one.
I think...
I looked and there are three that I've seen. So Razaketh is great.
Mm-hmm.
There's also Torgar, Famine Incarnate.
Ooh, I do like Torgar.
Yeah, that's got nice, you know, it's more castable as well.
If you draw it, you can just cast it off Liliana Plus.
Right.
Yeah, so that's awesome. And then the other one, which kind of makes me think going wide and having some artifacts, is Herald of Anguish. Just a really, really big threat. But also, if you draw it and you happen to have a few other artifacts, you can just cast it for, you know, maybe 5 mana, 4 mana.
Yeah, I like the end step triggered ability.
I also think just like Demon of Dark Schemes, for example, is a really powerful card to both reanimate, and it's good for reanimating things. Like six drops, like if you go Liliana Plus and then it survives and then next turn you can minus on a creature in your graveyard and then also have mana up, that, like, that's a really powerful interaction. So, I mean, I don't think you have to be trying to cheat like super massive creatures into play, but... something like Demon Lord Bells and Lock or Demon of Dark Schemes seems pretty good to me.
I think I like both of those cards as well. I really like Bells and Lock here too. So let's throw those in there. Yeah, it sounds good. How about Noxious Gearhulk?
That's a good card.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good card. I think we can throw it in for now and see if we have too many six drops like at the end.
Okay.
The curves in this format are a little weird, kind of sort of hard to figure out. I don't really know for sure what they should look like. But...
Yeah, the curve is kind of shaped by your commander as well, right? Like you don't really need a bunch of five drops if your commander is a good five cost play, right?
And that, yeah, that's
so
true.
That like taxes that spot more.
That's very true. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Shall we perhaps consider our removal situation?
Oh, I was going to start suggesting reanimation spells to you.
Let's do that. We'll get to removal later.
Yeah, let's finish up. So, Yawgmoth's Vile Offering is
love it.
Is probably
amazing.
The best one.
That sounds insane with Liliana, yeah.
Yeah, there's also the Eldest Reborn, of course.
I'm fine with that. I will allow it.
Lest we forget.
I'm fine with it and happy with it.
I guess we've covered Demon of Dark Schemes. There's also Whisper.
Blood Liturgist. That's a good combo with Liliana's plus.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
It curves really nicely, right?
Yeah, I was a little hesitant to just put it in the deck to just slam it in the deck because, again, it sort of depends on having enough creatures. But actually, you make a good point where Liliana plus.
Yeah.
I mean, admittedly, if you have Liliana in play, you can probably just minus to get the same effect.
Okay, check it out. You go Whisper on 4, Liliana plus on 5, and then activate Whisper. And then on 6, you just reanimate Whisper with Liliana's minus, and you're doing it.
Also, I like that Whisper plays well into the themes that some of these other cards are trying to make us do. Like, Torgar is much better if you have a bunch of things to sacrifice. And then Whisper is also better for that. And Herald of Anguish wants you to have a bunch of, like, artifacts. So if you add all this up, things like Weaponcraft Enthusiast suddenly become, like, a really good card.
Oh, yeah. If we play... I don't know how many like artifact payoffs there are in black, to be honest, other than Herald.
I don't think there's a ton, but like if we just had some random artifacts in our deck.
Yeah, Karn is a valid card we could choose to play as well.
Yeah, Karn is a good magic card.
Liliana's
Mastery. We have a lot of legends in our deck too, so maybe Traxos is good, and it triggers off artifacts too.
Yeah, I could see Traxos being good.
It might not be also.
Yeah, we'll see.
I think Liliana's Mastery is worth considering. That makes some zombies and
Anthem. You have to play that card.
I think you don't have to, but I think playing
like all these zombie payoffs are probably good.
Yeah, I mean, you have to keep in mind that when you go through standard, you're going to see like, oh my god, this 5-drop is great. Oh my god, this 5-drop is great. Oh my god, this 5-drop is great. And it's true, they are all great, but you know, you can't actually just put all of them in your deck. So this is something that we'll have to keep in mind. Because like another card that I was about to suggest is Gilded Lotus. But now I'm sort of thinking twice about it.
I was looking at it earlier as well, and I think it's bad too.
Right. You know what makes a bunch of mana but is actually insane in our deck?
Cabal Stronghold?
Yes, but not what I was going to say.
Okay, well.
Is that even actually all that insane in our deck? Like you need so many swamps for it to turn a profit.
Oh, we're probably going to play a lot of swamps.
I mean, we're going to play a lot of swamps, but, like, is it going to actually speed up our casting of any of our cards? I guess it's probably worth including, but...
I mean, it's probably
just a
reroll. It's pretty free,
You're going to play it.
But I'm not sure it'll be insane ever.
All right, so anyways, the card I was going to mention is Azor's Gateway.
I do like Azor's Gateway.
That's cute. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's going to set up your animation, and then...
You exile cards under it. Try again?
Oh, no. This card is not... I don't know what any magic cards do anymore.
Yeah,
this is just a disaster.
Just a full-on episode of Neil doesn't know the text of the card.
I think we could consider some sort of tutoring effects. The best options would be either Razaketh's Rite or the Final Parting, which...
Yeah, honestly, I'm not... I guess I could be down with Final Parting to synergize... Actually, I'm definitely down with Final Parting. But other than that, I'm... kind of off tutors, like they're just so expensive, and the more tutors you put in your deck, the less cool cards you get to play with.
Yeah, I do like the argument that tutors in, you know, singleton formats are stupid and should not be allowed.
Final Parting I can get behind.
It's so good with
Razaketh in our graveyard.
Yeah, exactly. that's what I like about it.
Josu Vess is another card that is probably just going to be good.
Yeah, I like how that is good on 4 and good in the late game. What about Razaketh's Rite? That's the saga where you make 2 clerics on chapters 1 and 2, and they're 0
that's
one.
That's not at all what Razaketh's Rite does. Rite of Bells and Rite, Lock.
Rite of Bells and Lock, sorry.
Do they all have rites?
I guess they do.
Gristlebrand have a rite? I don't think he does.
Maybe not yet.
What do you mean not? He's dead, Neil.
Whoa, spoilers. Spoilers.
I'm not a lore master, Ben. You can't just put that on me.
If he doesn't have a rite yet, he ain't going to get one.
Wow.
Yeah, I think I'm in for Rite of Bells and Lock because, well, I don't know. It depends if we can do stuff with dinky creatures other than just Whisper.
It's good with Whisper. It's good with Torgar, Famine Incarnate.
Yeah, it's good with Torgar also.
The drawback on the 6-6 could potentially end up being problematic for us, though.
They just have to kill it, basically. Do they? I played with this card in Limited, and it's... They have to kill it, or else it just kills them, usually.
Okay, all right.
I haven't seen the downside be that bad.
Then I can I could certainly see the inclusion of that card being good.
All right, let me throw out a couple here. So one card I just cut, but it might just be too good, but we did talk about the 5-drop problem. What do you guys think about the big old Skyboat? Is that just not worth flying?
Nah, I'm not about it. It doesn't...
I mean, it's really, really good, but...
But it's just not that interesting.
It's not what we're trying to do here. Yeah. Right.
And then the other one, which is way cooler, if we're going kind of the more, like, making tokens and doing stuff like that, what do you guys think about Eliminate the Competition?
What does that one do?
Eliminate the Competition is a really powerful card.
Yeah, that's...
If we're in for lots of creatures.
You sacrifice, like... It's like a 5-drop, and you sacrifice X creatures and destroy X creatures?
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's really good with the Rite of Bells and Lock, for instance.
Another payoff for putting a bunch of permanents in play is Twilight Prophet.
Yeah, I think we should definitely,
super powerful.
Definitely play Twilight Prophet.
It's just a good card that we should probably play.
I think so in the 4-drop slot, I like Twilight Prophet. I think I like Gonti, Lord of Luxury.
Yeah, that card's just great.
That card's just too high power level to not include. I think Karn is a bit of a question mark, although with the cards we've been selecting so far, I think it might be a... You know, the sad side of the question mark rather than...
Yeah, I'm pretty whatever about Karn.
How about Big Chups, Ravenous Chupacabra?
Yeah, that card's fine.
Okay. It's a nice one for reanimating, too.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, fine. You're right.
It actually fits the theme.
Vraska's Contempt is also a card.
Yeah, Vraska's Contempt,
Settle the Score,
right. With Liliana.
Yeah, I like how that plays with
my
Liliana.
Goodness, I forgot that it was illegal printing now. Yeah, let's definitely Settle the Score.
I mean, it's just Liliana theme. For the lore, we have to.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. How about
Dark Bargain is also a card that I think we should play.
That's just 3 and a black, draw 2, and draw 2 out of the top 3.
Yeah, it's pretty good. You just find anything and then reanimate it the next
turn. Yeah, I like how it puts the biggest thing into the graveyard to reanimate, so that's clever.
And sometimes they won't see it coming either, because it's an instant.
Yeah, it's an instant, so you can do that after they do their turn 4. All right, I'm in for that. How about...
I like playing Skittering Surveyor.
Yeah, I'm in for that. I'm always in for a good Skittering Surveyor.
I could also be in for Orozco Relic, just because our commander is a 5-mana spell. So
yep,
3 to 5 is like pretty good numbers.
We do have a million 4-drops, but...
Yeah.
Speaking of a million 4-drops, what do you guys think of Phyrexian Scriptures, the Dune Blast?
I think that card is very good, but I don't know how well it's going to work with tokens if tokens is what we're doing. Like,
okay, we don't have to play it. It's kind of unexciting. It's, you know, it's not that fun. So,
kind of fun.
but it doesn't really do, like, we're not even playing all that many artifacts, so it's not going to be a Plague Wind. It's just going to be a Dune Blast, which is still good, obviously. But it's a permanent they can interact with. I don't know. We didn't have to play it.
By the way, a card that is legal to play if we want to be discarding cards is Hazoret's Monument.
That's kind of messed up that that's legal to play, but I suppose
it
is.
Very good.
Yeah, I think I'd rather not play that.
I'd rather play the 2-drop zombie creature.
Just both players discard a card?
Yeah.
I guess that creature's not that bad. Especially if we have the Eldest Reborn as well.
Yeah, that's actually a good point.
Since we can rise from the grave, the opponent's graveyard.
I don't want to have just a million cheap spells, because that's not really what the format's about. But we do want to make sure we don't just die. So the things like maybe Gifted Aetherborn, having a couple
Gifted Aetherborn is a fine card.
Just like
Kitesail Freebooter is also a card you can
play. I like that one because it can also disrupt, just like let you do your thing, you know?
Yeah, Seeker's Squire is also a 2-drop that you can play.
Yeah, that I we're definitely a little bit low on things to do in turns 1 through 3. So
yeah,
the idea of any playable.
We start with all the cool cards, you know.
Yeah,
I don't know what you guys were doing, but I was looking through all of the black and colorless cards in Standard.
I was doing that as well.
I did the same thing.
Yep. All right. We smart.
Speaking of cheap card that I think is good, we should probably play Heart of Quran, because it's just good at protecting Liliana.
Yeah,
is it?
But
How is that good at protecting Liliana? You play Liliana in plus, and you just can't crew the thing on their turn.
What? Tristan?
I forgot what it does.
Oh, you can do that? You can do that back then as an instant? Jeez.
Does no one know what magic cards do except for me?
Obviously, I don't. I've never seen that done.
I just didn't read the part on exile, man. I knew it was like loot. I just thought looting. Oh, that's perfect.
All right. Okay.
So mine is excusable.
I'm in for Heart of Kieran, given that this new information that I've received.
New information.
Well, okay. No deck that's ever played Heart of Kieran in a standard format has ever animated it with a Planeswalker on their opponent's turn. So
that's just not true at all.
Blatantly true.
That's like pretty much what it did.
Not even close.
Like one of the top truest things that's ever been said.
Oh my goodness.
All right, let's not stay on this topic for too long, or else I'll have to edit it out during later, so that I don't look stupid.
I just found a card that's really cool.
What's that?
Embalmer's Tools.
Ooh.
What does that do for the...
Activated abilities of creature cards in your graveyard cost one less to activate.
Okay.
Tap an untapped zombie you control. Target player puts the top card of their library into their graveyard.
All right. What activated abilities are we doing in our graveyard, or are we just using this to move ourselves?
That's not... Yeah, that's the one. Okay. I mean, we can play the 1/2... discard a cardy.
I mean, I'm pretty sure this card is just awful, but I like the
look. Can we have a little respect, please?
See, that's also what we're saying. Your opponent.
Yeah, that is what we're saying. Are there any good cycling cards that we can play that throw in the graveyard?
Archfiend of Ifnir.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's nice.
I'm in for that. I think Horror of the Broken Lands is possibly. And Rite of
I think it's probably 2 weeks, but maybe.
Yeah, and Rite of Belzenlok. They both just cycle for B, which is really nice. But
well, I think Neil wants a cycling creature specifically.
Yeah, just
yeah,
something
Archfiend is the best one to do that with, I think. And then Horror is second best. Dusk Legion Zealot seems like a worthy inclusion.
Yeah, if we're whispering, I guess.
It's very good with Whisper. It's,
I think Thaumatic Compass and Sorcerer's Spyglass are both... well, I kind of don't want to play Sorcerer's Spyglass just on principle.
It is pretty lame.
Yeah,
listeners, you can play Sorcerer's Spyglass if you want. I promise not to judge you too harshly.
Look, we're not going to do it, but just because we're not going to do it doesn't mean that you can't do it. It's just that we think it's unethical for us to do it, but we would never judge you for doing it.
Too much.
All right. But yeah, that's pretty... pretty silly card for the format.
I think we have a pretty good number of like twos and threes actually now.
Okay, yeah. So check in with us and let me know what. Let me
right
know
now, cards I've pulled aside worth considering are Dreadshade.
I like that.
Weaponcraft Enthusiast, Plague Belcher, Lord of the Accursed, Amid Eternal. Like, there's a bunch of good like zombie payoffs there. And then we mentioned Skittering Surveyor, which I think is just a great card. Gate to the Afterlife, which I'm not convinced is good, but it's an option. And then to have another like kind of Chupacabra effect, there's Bane Whip Punisher.
Yeah, I like Bane Whip Punisher, actually. That's in one of my current Brawl decks.
Ooh, which one?
Ingrath.
Okay, that's cool.
So, I mean, that's like a good... So far on like twos, we have Heart of Kharan, Kitesail Freebooter, Gifted Aetherborn... I don't know if we want to play Walk the Plank, but it's an option.
I think Walk the Plank should be included. Yeah, that seems like...
Yeah, I think Walk the Plank is pretty good, actually.
Miasmic Mummy, Dusk Legion Zealot, and Thematic Compass. Like, that's... You don't need that many twos. You just want to be able to play something.
All right.
Yeah, I agree. That seems like... Well, some of those twos are fake twos. Like, you can also play Treasure Map if you want.
Yeah, I mean, we could add one or two more, but you just don't need a million.
So how are we looking, Neil? How's the deck?
I've pulled aside 42 cards right now, which is a lot.
How many? So
many.
Yeah, this is going to be what, like a 23 land deck?
No.
A 25 what? Land deck?
No. Try higher. We're
25
one
or 26, I think.
Yeah, I mean,
okay. if we're one. So the nice thing about Brawl is that you can play extra lands basically for free because you always have an extra spell in your hand.
Right.
So I'm not sure like how many we plan on playing, but I think between 26 and 27 should be the right number of lands to play.
All right, let's figure out which non-basic lands we want to put in our deck, and then we'll go through and cut some spells.
Cabal Stronghold.
Yeah, I like Cabal Stronghold. I think Arch of Araska.
I think you misunderstood me. That was the end of the list.
You don't. Oh yeah, you just want to play a maximized Cabal Stronghold. You don't want any other non basics in the deck. I think Arch of Araska is pretty high upside.
Yeah, it's whatever.
Pretty expensive.
You should probably put other non basics in the deck.
I mean, Arch of Araska, Desert of the Glorified.
Yeah, Black Desert is somewhat tempting as well.
If near Deadlands, if you're gonna play that. There's the Black Memorial, but that's
you should play Field of Ruin also.
Yeah. Field of Ruin doesn't even hurt your Cabal Stronghold, really.
Yeah.
It's just a good card.
How about Zalfir and Void?
No. I mean, it would be good, but I also... I don't know if you've ever played with Cabal Coffers, but it's really fun.
All right, so this is
five non-basics right now, which I think is reasonable.
Yeah, five non-basics, 21 Swamps. Yeah,
sure.
All right.
Should we play a Mox Amber?
No.
Probably not. I was thinking about that.
I guess our legends are too expensive.
Yeah, and it's not like we can play a legend and then play a Mox Amber and really do anything else that turn. I don't know. Kind of sucks.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, I'm in.
Want me to just like read off all the cards we have right now, or how?
I think we should do it CMC by CMC. So like, I think first it's good for you to say how many 2-drops we have, and then we can try to figure out how many we want to play.
All right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, so let's start either at the bottom or the top.
Why don't I read how many of each we have, just so you have kind of an overview of what's going on.
And we need to make...
right now, we need to make 8 cuts.
Okay. That's not
too bad. Right now, we have 7 2-drops, 9 3-drops, 11 4-drops, 5 5-drops, 5 6-drops, 2 7s, and 2 8s.
Torgar
and Razika.
Okay.
All right. I like the idea of keeping both of those 8s.
Yes.
Yeah, especially because one of them is not really an 8.
I think the biggest outlier was when I said we had 11 4-drops.
Yeah. When we get there, we'll make some cuts. Let's start from the top. So we're keeping our 8s. What are our 7s?
Herald of Anguish and God Pharaoh's Gift.
I think we should cut Herald of Anguish.
Okay. I can get behind that. What are our 6s?
Well, we have Marionette Master, which is pretty bad if we're cutting up other cards.
Cut.
Noxious Gearhulk, which maybe. I think is worth keeping.
I think it's worth keeping as well.
All right.
Tetsamok, which I think is kind of lame.
Cut.
Yeah, Tetsamok's not even good if you reanimate it. Get out of here.
It doesn't fit the theme.
It's good if it gets countered and then you reanimate it.
I guess you can cast Yawgmoth's Vile Offering with it, but that's about it.
I'm mostly off it. I think it's lame. Demon of Dark Schemes, which I think is cool.
I love it.
Yeah, keep.
Demon Lord Belzenlock, which I'm in for, kind of. It depends.
I'm a strong keep
on Demon Lord.
If that one gets cut from the deck, I'm leaving.
You're just
off. Let's cut it. Cut it. Get it out of here.
And that's been the end of Valheim Strategies. Hope you guys have enjoyed.
We just made a Twitter as well.
Yeah, that's
unclear because it seems like only one out of the three of us actually know how to use the Twitter.
I'll show you guys how to use Twitter later. Let's not derail the show. What are we on now? Are we still on 6s?
We have 3 6s now. That's it.
Okay, I like that.
Yeah.
Our 5s. I think we can cut eliminate the competition because that's not the direction we're going.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so our 5s then, we have Liliana's Mastery.
You'd love it, yeah. I think even when we're not, when it's not heavily on theme, it's going to be a pretty powerhouse play.
I could go either way. I could take it. I could leave it on Liliana's Mastery.
I think it's our worst 5, but I think it is good.
I think if you're not playing cheaper zombies, then it's
all right.
There's not really much point all right. to it.
You've convinced me. We can cut it.
Right now we do have cheaper zombies, so I think we should just wait to decide.
Okay, we'll put it in the maybe column.
Yeah, I'll put it in the maybe. I'm starting a maybe column, so there we go. All right, Eldest Reborn, which I'm
definitely
all
keeping that. Yeah.
Final Parting, Eldest
Reborn. I like Final Parting. I think one tutor is not going to be too bad, and this one really synergizes.
Yeah, I like Final Parting as well.
And then Yawgmoth's Vile Offering, which is a must.
Yeah, that's a Mondo combo with Final Parting as well.
And those are only 5s now, so we have...
Perfect.
Have we considered Direfleet Ravager at all? Have you considered the sheer amount of damage that it can do to the opponent?
Yeah, consider going Torgar into Direfleet Ravager. They're just, you know, dead.
But it deals less damage that way.
Yeah, but it deals much less damage if you do it the other way around, so.
All right.
Moving right along.
Yeah, Direfleet Ravager is a pet card of mine.
So the four drops, we have Settle the Score, which we like.
Yep, definitely keeping that.
Vraska's Contempt.
Gotta keep it, I think.
Chupacabra.
Yep. That's good.
And that's sort of the removal suite there. We have Traxos, which is probably bad.
Get it out of here.
Yeah, cut it.
Cut all of Neil's ideas.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Every card that, you know, I'm hearing for the first time and Neil reading through the list, just get it out of here.
We've talked about that card.
Like, you know, Marionette Master, like, none of us talked about it at all. You just, you know, double-clicked it and we're like, oh, this could work. It's like, no, it's obviously not going to work.
We talked about the idea of, like, tokens at one point. That's
okay.
Why I was there.
All right.
Twilight Prophet, which I'm less in on, but it's still probably...
I think it's still a powerful card.
Less in on Twilight Prophet? What's wrong with you?
I'd keep it.
I mean, it depends what the rest of our stuff looks like.
We've made a lot of cuts already, right? And we only had to make 8? We're like pretty close to limit anyways, so.
All right. Rite of Bells and Lock.
That's the saga?
Good if we're playing Whisper. Yeah, that's the saga.
Yeah, I think it's worth including on power level, but we have cut a lot of the cards that had that sort of synergy, so I could see cutting it.
Okay, I'll put in the maybe.
All right.
It's good with Twilight Prophet.
It is good with Twilight Prophet.
I know, it is really good with Twilight Prophet.
Yeah, you're right.
I wonder if that's a standard deck. Are there any good Ascend cards?
Hunger, but that's maybe not great. Gaunti, we said we're keeping.
Yeah,
Gaunti's just too good.
Cutting the Gaunti, man.
Whisper, I think, is just good, even with just Liliana.
Yeah,
I think good enough. Keep Whisper, just because I think it's a fun card.
And
it also lets you like loop your comes into play effect abilities, even if you have more reanimation anyway.
Who doesn't want to just keep looping Noxious Gearhulk?
Or Torgar, Famine Incarnate.
I wonder if we should have more sac outlets anyway, actually.
We can talk about that. I think we might end up with fewer than 60 cards after we finish this, so.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so Dark Bargain we're keeping because it's cool and awesome.
Yeah, Dark Bargain, it's also one of our few
cards. Rite of Bells and Lock makes you sac things, Ben, so how can you be maybe on
that? That is sort of true.
I mean, yeah, it is sort of true. But. A card that I put here just to talk about, I'm not sure if it's good or not, is Joyra's Familiar. We have a lot of legends and artifacts and things.
I think it's just too anemic.
I don't hate it, but I think I dislike it more than like a Rozka Relic.
I think it's weak. It's a weak card.
All right, I wasn't really on it. I just wanted to mention it.
No, it's fine.
I would cut it.
I know we're cutting your favorite card, but I think you just have to live with it.
Karn, I don't love it.
Yeah.
I don't love it.
Let's
either.
Cut it.
All right, it's gone. All right, three drops. We have Dreadshade, which I think is great.
Yeah, keep. Snap keep.
Weaponcraft Enthusiast, which I think is still good.
What does that card even do?
It's a 3-mana 0/1 with Fabricate 2.
Okay.
It's good with Twilight Prophet. It's good with Whisper. It just makes like a lot of creatures. It's kind of good with Demon of Dark Schemes to get enough energy. Like, it's good with Godfarer's Gift.
I guess
it's good with Rozakath. It's good with Torgar. It's actually just good with every card in our
deck. All right, fine.
Okay, all right. We'll let you have one of your cards, Neil.
I'm happy to have, like, kind of weird 3-mana cards.
Yeah, right, fine.
Next one is Plague Belcher, which also comes with Weaponcraft Enthusiast.
I hate it.
You hate it?
Oh, yeah.
All right, we can cut it.
I just, draining people out from 30 is not a realistic thing.
Okay. What about Lord of the Accursed?
Don't love it, but did we cut Liliana's Mastery?
No.
It's in the maybe. You want me to put this in the maybe? I'll put it in the maybe.
I think it's kind of just like if we play Liliana's Mastery. Like, I don't know. I don't like playing those cards if we're not going to play like Dread Wanderer, you know?
I mean, just making 3/3s is good.
Yeah, I think they're just reasonable mid-rangey cards. Liliana's Mastery as a permanent when you're guaranteed to always have access to Liliana's Death Majesty. I don't know. I think it's okay.
It's definitely in the maybe, because that's where I put it.
Okay.
All right. How about another zombie? Amit Eternal.
Interesting.
Pretty medium about this card as well, but...
Yeah.
I don't hate it either.
And let's keep it. Let's keep it. We've got a lot of cards.
Skittering Surveyor is great.
Definitely keeping that. Yeah, favorite card.
Gates of the Afterlife, I think, is bad. We don't.
All right, get it out of here. Yeah, we're not even all that focused on Godfarer's Gift, nor is it even that strong a permanent for us if we like all in cheating it out. I don't know.
Right.
Like Gate.
I think it's pretty bad. Right now we have like 17 creatures.
Gate is just not going to be our seventh land.
I'm fine with cutting Gate. I'm questioning the assertion about Godfarer's Gift.
Like, Gift is going to be good.
No. I think we should play Gift for sure.
Absolutely. Okay. I like Gift. I'm just, I don't think Gate is an effective plan in this deck.
We're all in the same
cool.
Yeah.
We cool.
Yeah. Also, Final Parting is pretty gas with Godfarer's Gift.
Point that out. Yeah, you're right.
Vona's Hunger, I think, is bad. It's just an idea of if we're tokening.
Yeah, get it out of here.
All right. So, those were our threes.
What about Fiend with Punisher?
Sorry, that's there, and I think it's good.
Great, keep it.
All right, our twos, I had already mentioned Heart of Quran. I think it's great.
Yeah, keep it.
Kitesail Freebooter, I think is great.
Yeah.
Gift of Daedalborn.
Looks mandatory.
It's definitely not mandatory, but I think it's good.
Okay. Miasmic Mummy, you're saying?
Yeah. Miasmic Mummy.
I like it.
I like it.
I think it's cute.
I also like it, but yeah. I've always had a soft spot for that card. So I thought
you played it at Pro Tour, right?
I did, yeah.
Okay, so
I played against the New Perspectives deck, and I played my Miasmic Mummies, and my opponent just could not believe what was happening.
That's so great.
I know, it was great.
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, I don't know if we considered these two drops before, but Seeker's Squire.
Yeah, I think
that could
fits.
Be good.
And there's.
I'm kind of sad every time it doesn't hit flip a land, though.
Yeah, but if it mills a big thing, that's also
yeah,
a combo.
That's true.
And Glint Sleeve Siphoner is the other one.
Interesting. Yeah, I was seeing that as well.
I don't like it.
I think I can pass on it as well.
I don't really
like
it either, to be honest. Mostly because I'm sick of the card.
I think, definitely like the Squire more.
I think Moment of Craving is worth consideration as well.
No, that's not what we're doing here.
That's not what Brawl is about, my friend.
All right, fair enough. How about Treasure Map?
Okay,
did we think about that?
We briefly mentioned it. It's probably good.
How do you feel?
I was going to say also Urza's Tome.
Yeah, that's literally the card I was going to say.
Urza's Tome, I'm 100% in for.
All right, let's do it.
Okay,
get it
good,
in there.
Great. Also wanted it. I'm very happy.
Wow,
I think
that's
very good.
That's some podcast synergy right there.
I'll tell you what, though, Neil. I'll be in for playing Lord of the Accursed if you're in for playing Embalmer's Tools.
No, I'm not in for that.
I'm a pass on both of those. So.
Ah, dang it.
Yeah.
I'll go for the good ones, but not the bad ones.
All right.
And
then Walk the Plank as well. Is that should be in our two-drop column?
Yeah, I have that in and haven't removed it.
Perfect.
Think it's good. Okay, Seeker's Squire, right?
Yeah, Seeker's Squire,
so
Urza's Tome.
Let me just read off the twos. We have a lot of twos now, which is I think good.
Yeah, love it.
As long as they're all actually good, but I think they are. So we have Heart of Quran, Kitesail Freebooter, Gifted Aetherborn, Miasmic Mummy, Dusk Legion Zealot, Thematic Compass, Walk the Plank, Treasure Map, Urza's Tome, and Seeker's Squire.
Great.
And that's 10 two drops, and they all I think are pretty synergistic.
Yep, love it.
Yeah, I think the one I hate the most is Gifted Aetherborn.
All right, let's cut it.
Okay.
Fair enough.
It's pretty lame.
That card is too much of a real card anyways.
I mean, so is Kitesail Freebooter, but I think Kitesail Freebooter lets you cast Liliana, so it counts.
Yeah, it's much more of a meme.
Like, they're trying to do something to you, and you're like, look, I just want to do my cool thing, so I think it's totally fair. Okay, so right now we have 55 main deck cards, and then the Liliana, which is our general, and then
we go up?
Huh?
Oh, you're counting lands.
55 including
lands.
Yeah, so we've got five free spots. Is that what you're saying?
We have four free spots right now, and we have four maybe cards, so we could choose to put those back in, or we're pretty light on three drops right now. We only have four three drops.
How do you feel about Never to Return?
Kind of off it.
Okay.
I think it's just a good spell, but...
It makes a zombie.
Yeah. But, I mean, are you going to spend four mana to do that? I guess we could play the Araska Relic. Suggested.
Yeah, I like Araska Relic.
I also like Araska Relic. All
right, adding it.
Great.
Do we want to play multiple of that type of effect or no? Because there's also the...
there's like 16 of them if we want them.
Oh, there's yeah, you're right. There's a bunch.
I think Roscoe is the best one.
All right, maybe just play one. Yeah, because getting another card back is pretty relevant.
Mirage Mirror is another 3-drop that I think is pretty good in Brawl.
What does that one do?
It's a 3-mana artifact, and you can pay 2 mana, and it becomes a copy of an artifact, creature, enchantment, or land.
I remember that from I love drafting that one.
So I believe you can copy sagas with it if you wanted to. Sorry, I was just thinking. I had a funny saga judge question. I was just wondering what happens if you put like a fifth saga counter on it, or chapter counter on it, lore counter on a saga.
Just nothing, right?
Your saga will get sacrificed, and nothing will happen. But I was just curious if the rules had actually like.
Yeah, sagas have a lot of weird rules around them.
Oh yeah, they do.
Facilitate all of.
So, gonna be honest, I didn't think the Vona's Hunger was that horrible of a plan.
Okay. Or
that horrible of a card, rather. Just throwing that out there for other threes.
I'm fine with it.
Also, how do you feel about Tomb Robber?
Ooh, I like it.
Okay.
I just went past it, but I like it.
Oh, really? Wow.
Let's do it.
I didn't expect you guys to bite on that one either.
I'm a huge fan of that card. Because
I think we're playing a lot of lands, and so it's pretty good if you just happen to hit the wrong side of that. But also, if you just draw your Razaketh and... it's just another way that you can set it up. So, yeah, I think we should play it.
Nice.
Cool.
I'm not really in on the Vona's Hunger.
Okay, that's fine.
All right, so
I don't hate it, but I don't love it either, so.
All right, so we have 2 more slots. And I think we got a good number of threes now, because we got to add the Relic and the Tomb Robber, so that put us back up to 6 threes. The question is, do we want to play either Lord of the Accursed or Omen Eternal? I don't want to play the Eternal anymore. That's not what our deck's doing.
Yeah, get it out of here, for sure. These are from the maybe board?
The Lord is kind of medium. Yeah, these were the medium options we were deciding on before.
I guess our removal is pretty healthy, right? We don't have to play Never to Return, isn't
it? No, it's definitely not mandatory.
All right.
I kind of still like the Lord, just to have something else to do on 3.
Okay, sure. I'm in.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's... some games we'll just draw that and Liliana's Mastery and just go wide.
All right, so we have to play.
How do we feel about playing Boneyard Parlay?
I was looking at that earlier as well. Yeah, that's kind of interesting. Drop? Yeah.
I don't think we want more 7-drops.
I agree that it's probably bad. I was thinking about how it would usually play, and like usually you're just not going to have all that many of your... like the deck doesn't even... if we had all of our good reanimation targets in the graveyard, it would be sick. But...
well, you can target their graveyard, too.
Yeah, but how often are you really doing all that?
I think all our other cards are way, way... man, I just want to go play Brawl with this deck right now. This is so cool. Unfortunately, Brawl exists. So if someone wants to play a casual game versus me, I'm in. I kind of want to get this Rite of Bells and Lock back in the deck, but...
sure.
Okay.
I don't really know. I'm saying I don't really know how to do it. We'd have
to click and drag.
Yeah. Oh, what about Vanquisher's Banner? Do we have enough zombies to cast?
No, a lot of them don't get cast as well, right?
Okay. Yeah, also 5-drops are like the worst drops in our deck.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, we already have 4 other 5-drops, so.
We could play Phyrexian Scriptures. I mean, I know we talked about it, but. Actually, Neil, what mana cost of cards are we looking for?
The
deck is
not
full,
really
right?
Anything. I mean, the deck is done. We have 1 too many cards right now.
Oh.
Rite of Bells and Lock is still on the chopping block.
We would need to cut something else if we wanted to put that in?
Yeah.
Exactly. All right, we'll just keep it out. Keep it out, I think.
Okay.
So we're done.
Yeah, I think so.
We're done.
Oh, great.
Cool.
Genius deck builders.
Yep. We've done it again. We've really outdone ourselves this time. So yeah, that's
Did we? And we decided which non-basics we were playing already. Yeah, of course we did. Okay, great.
All right, I think this should be the post-in story where I just say all the cards.
Basically. No.
People can turn it off or no.
There will be a link alongside wherever you found this show.
It's not worth us saying all the cards.
Right. There will be a link to like a tappedout.net copy of this deck that you can then get. So
great.
Listeners, that's where you can find it.
Then that's that.
Yeah. And we'll tweet out the deck list as well, because at Allied Strats is the cool place where all the cool kids are.
This was really fun.
Absolutely, yeah. Brawl seems pretty cool. Would be interested in playing some games with this deck.
I'm kind of glad we picked a one color.
Yeah, that was really smart.
Because there's just
so many cards to look through. Options, yeah.
So. I actually tweeted, like, pretty early in the Brawl format, I tweeted that one of my favorite things about Brawl is that the card pool is large enough that I have to actually make decisions in deck building, but it's also small enough that you can just browse the entire thing on Magic Online.
Yeah, that is great.
As opposed to Commander, where it's impossible to browse the entire card pool.
Right, because Magic Online has used 40 gigabytes of RAM by the time you get halfway down.
Also, the other thing I don't like about Commander is that, like, the cards, it's kind of like Legacy, where the cards that get played are so powerful, usually, that kind of pushes out a lot of the other cool stuff you can do. Unless you just decide that's not what you want to do. But that's one problem I've, like, the few times I've played Commander, I'm like, you just get to play this really powerful card because you're putting all the powerful cards in your deck. Whereas this one, I think you get to focus a little more on synergies because you're playing with standard cards.
Yeah, the ceiling of power level is quite a lot lower, right? So everybody's playing in a tighter band and you're more likely to hit near where you're the person you're playing against has their deck too. So that makes more fun games.
Yep.
All right, so yeah, that's been our deck this week. We've built a Brawl deck for you, the listener. Let us know what you thought about that, and we'll do another. We'll let you know when we figure out when we're going to do our Patreon deck episode for Dominaria, but that may come after the Pro Tour, since Ben is, of course, forbidden from sharing his secrets until then.
Or Bowden.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Let's move on to our end story now, my favorite segment. This week's end story comes to us from Neil from Grand Prix Columbus.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm gonna start it off, and then I'm gonna pass the torch to Ben. But this first part, Eric and I got into town on Friday to practice some Team Sealed just before Ben got there, because he had a very late flight. We wanted to, you know, scope out the format a little bit more so we could inform Ben how we could best win at the tournament. And so we played some Team Sealed, and then it's time to get back to our hotel. So Eric calls up a Lyft, and a few minutes later we see the car and it's just driving in the middle of the street, and Eric, being Eric, is running up right alongside the car in the middle of the street trying to wave at the person. And finally they pull off in a side street, we get in the car, everything's okay, and the Lyft driver just turns to us and is like, "So you guys from out of town?" And we're like, "Yeah, you know, we're out of town. We're here just for the weekend." And the person says, "Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I just got here too. I don't really know anything about this place, you know. But, you know, here we are, and I guess this is where you're going. Okay, cool. So, do you guys lift a lot? Do you, like, know anything about it?" And we're like, it takes us places. He's like, "Yeah, I just started. Can you guys tell me a little bit more about Lyft? I don't really know anything about it, like, how it works or anything." We're like, not really. And then Eric just mentions that it was also kind of hard to see the person's car because it's listed as a burgundy car, but it's silver. So Eric just mentions this, and the person's like, "Oh yeah, I get that complaint a lot. I really have no idea how to fix it." So at this point, I'm just like, there's like a 50% chance we get to go where we're needed. And 10 minutes later, thank goodness, we just end up at our hotel and everything is actually just fine. But it was just, the horror was setting in, like, this is just a bizarre Lyft experience. So that's sort of where the Lyft experiences started for the weekend. But there was more. Ben, do you want to tell the second part?
Yeah, so the next day, you know, we stayed at a hotel which was kind of far away from the site. It was like maybe a mile or two away. So, no, more than, yeah, like 2 miles away. So we have to Lyft into downtown in order to get to the convention center. So we call up a Lyft. We make sure to leave plenty of time to get to the convention center. The driver picks us up. He's like, "Oh, yeah, there's this marathon going on. It might be kind of hard to get to where you're going. Like, but I know how to avoid it. So we'll just take these side streets that I know how to go." So we're taking these side streets. We exit the highway. We start taking these side streets to get to the convention center. And, you know, we're driving on this narrow alley, basically. And boom, like, the marathon is just directly in front of us. So we cannot pass. So Neil gets out to both look at the length of the marathon, right? Because we're parked in this narrow alley, so we can't really see to the sides. So we have no idea how long the runners are. Like, maybe it'll be over in the next 20 seconds. Maybe it'll take another 20 minutes, right? So Neil gets out to go look at the length of the running line and also to ask, like, a police officer how to get to the convention center through the marathon. And the running line is just way too long. And the police officer basically just tells us that there's no way in hell that we're going to be able to drive to the convention center. So we just have to exit our Lyft a mile and some change away from the convention center and just walk the rest of the way. And we basically have to power walk because we're like 30 minutes away and it's 8:30. So the build starts in about like 30 minutes away, and that's exactly the amount of time that it'll take for us to get there. So we start power walking up to the convention center, and at some point we have to cross the marathon in order to get to the, because we have to cross the street. The convention center is across the street. So we ask a security, like earlier in the marathon, there were designated pedestrian crossings, so we could have just crossed. So we ask a police officer, like, okay, where is the nearest crossing to here? And the police officer is just like, I have no idea. I don't think there is a crossing. So we just have to wait for like a very small break in the marathon and then start running.
We just join the
parallel marathon. We join the marathon for, you know, like 20 seconds that it took for us to basically run diagonally across the street to in order to cross the marathon.
Yeah, and then we just showed up. We showed up. I was like, it's this is going to be fine. You know, there's a bunch of other people. The marathon's going to definitely delay the tournament because they're not just going to start if all these other teams aren't showing up. And it was like one of the most prompt GPs of all time. Everyone's already seated. They're passing out product at like 9:02. And we're like, yeah. Wow, I'm glad we got here on time.
We showed up at like 9:02 and they started passing out product like a minute after we sat down or something. It was a close call.
That's a good thing that we power walked. We had some Lyft experiences, but overall a pretty good weekend. And hope you guys enjoyed this brawl talk. But that's this week's episode, and we'll unite again next time with more Allied Strategy.
All right.
The worst part is I think that police officer was just like full of it, because I'm pretty sure that we could have just driven parallel to the marathon.
Yeah,
most of the way to the convention center.
Right.
I think we were misinformed a lot.
Yeah. So we just walked parallel to the marathon for like 20 minutes, and we could have just driven on a side, like a street that was parallel to the marathon. We didn't need to cross it where we did.
It was just so brutal.